Brigadier Daniel, Reel 12.
I walked down to where there was a boundary wire, and the popping noise was a little way further on. So I followed it down, and I found that there were half a dozen Hitler youth who were shooting at some of the stronger men and women who must have heard that we were in the neighborhood and had tried to get over the wire but had not been able to, and they were hanging on the wire. These boys were pulling them off the wire and wounding them in their faces that were most painful. The men they were shooting in their balls, and the women they spread their legs away and shot them in the crotch. I shot the nearest four, and the other two ran away.
Did they shoot back at you?
No. They ran for their lives. It was not very fortunate for me, but I only had one round left. And I did not like the look of that Alsatian. I kept that one round in my hand, ready to use. I made my way back up the hill. I met a guard coming down, an elderly man, and seized him by the collar and intimated that I wished to be taken round and shown everything. He was very frightened. He walked slowly in front of me, and he showed me the gas ovens and the little piles that led to the gas ovens. They were mostly empty, but in one or two there were a few corpses lying about. But what upset me more than anything else was that at the doorway of one of the gas ovens there was a heap of spectacles higher than I stood. And I thought of the inmates who had had their spectacles taken off them before they were sent in, driven in, to be gassed to death. It was quite obvious that they had run out of fuel. They could not burn the bodies, and they could not use the gas ovens. I stood at the edge of this trench with all these corpses, and I had this guard in my hand, and I made as if to make him climb down into the ditch and see if by any chance any of these corpses were not dead, because it was very difficult to understand why an arm should come up and a leg come up and finally a whole body come up. He realized what I wanted him to do, struggled free, and he ran faster than any man I've ever seen run in my life into the nearest wood. I then returned to my tank, reassured by the men that I would stay there and that they could now come out and eat their breakfast. And I wished to eat mine, as we had 5 minutes before we had this at all.
This hadn't put you off your breakfast, then?
Oh, no, you've got to eat. I got out into the divisional headquarters on the wireless. I told them a brief outline of the camp, and I asked for 2 Red Cross teams, a dark team, and a doctor's team. I did not think that the inmates, in which there were about 3,000, had very much chance of life. I then got on to Brigadier Harvey. I told him I'd finished and I was going up to join him, and I asked him what he wanted me to do. He said he wished me to contact the young officer who was commanding an empty aircraft battery that was on the road by the gate, and to put him in charge of the camp and to tell him to order whatever he wanted from divisional headquarters.
Now, would that be Charles Chapman? the young officer.
That's
what you say it was in the in your memoir.
I finished my breakfast, got in my tank, put it back to the house in which it was entangled, and fired a couple of rounds into the woods where these German guards were hiding, and handed over the camp to the young major and proceeded to follow the route taken by Hildegard Harvey with great thankfulness.
So you hadn't been able to do anything practical?
Nothing.
Was there any food that you saw in the camp at all?
Yes. There was a guard who was mostly on the slope, and he had a little trailer full of uncooked potatoes. I wonder if there was so, about this.
But not enough for 3,000 people?
Good God, no. Who was it? The other side of the wire, there were full of fields of every sort of edible, cabbages, cauliflowers, peas, beans, potatoes, everything. But inside the camp there was no food at all.
Now, you left the camp then?
Yeah.
But you came back 2 days later?
Yeah.
Nothing relevant in between?
No.
So what happened when you why did you return 2 days later? You came back with General Roberts.
And I was asked to show them around. They didn't want to go back alone.
That was General Roberts and Roscoe. Is Roscoe
Harvey.
Roscoe Harvey, that's his brigadier.
Yes, his name.
So what was the situation when you got back?
Exactly as I left it.
Had the young officer not been able to...
He had reduced a certain amount of order and had done what he could to await the teams that he had asked from Army headquarters.
And had they arrived, had the medical team arrived?
No. No one. Irma Greece, the woman who could so easily have killed me, had been forced into the ditch with corpses. She was naked, and she was straightening out the corpses, which was a job I thought that she was well able to do.
You think it served her right?
Yeah.
Why was she naked? She'd been stripped.
Don't ask me. I wasn't there.
It wasn't you that did that, though. I mean, you hadn't ordered that.
No.
Was she looking? Hang on a minute. Was she looking for survivors, or was she just sorting them out?
She was trying to do something to avoid attention being drawn to herself. That's all I can say. Anybody who had any arm that was up, she pushed it down. That sort of thing. She realized she knew they were all dead. Because they'd been through the gas chambers. But because they had no fuel, they hadn't burnt the bodies as they had of all the others.
So, what happened next then? You showed them round. How did Roscoe and.
I didn't ask them. Neither of them spoke at all. We got into our tent and. We went back to carry on with fighting the war.
So that was the last you saw of Belsen?
Yes.
Did it affect your attitude to the Germans?
No. Not here. I disliked the Germans anyway. I increased my dislike of the Germans as a nation.